Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lorai. Well, we're going to talk about the outcome of the election and the word that Joe Biden is the next president of the United States. We'll talk about that today here on the program. We're going to hear Florida this week. Just want to give you an update. We heard on the NPR News about the tropical storm Etta. After coming ashore in the Florida Keys last night about 11 o'clock, tropical storm Etta is now wandering along the eastern Gulf of Mexico, dumping heavy rain on the Sunshine State and raking it with gusty winds. Etta will likely become a Category 1 hurricane later this week as it drifts along Florida's west coast for the rest of the week. And Etta will likely make landfall again somewhere between Tampa and the Florida Panhandle by late Saturday. So we got to keep an eye on this. The governor has declared an emergency in advance of Etta. In addition to the tropical storm, forecasters are also watching another potential storm in the central Atlantic that has a 40% chance of forming in the next 5 days, the Hurricane Center says. This is a record-breaking Atlantic hurricane season right now, and so keep your eyes on Etta. Well, first, some listener comments about last Friday's program. Last Friday, we were talking about the election outcome, and after the program, here's what several listeners had to say.
Rick, this is Rick from Tampa. Boy, great show today on the elections, and you're very sharp and quick on your feet with all the questions that come at you. When you say votes, count all the votes, that's pretty straightforward. When you say count the legal votes, it sounds like you're qualifying them in some way. And what I would say is that if we want to throw out, there's a lot of illegal votes we may have to look at. We may have to throw out a lot of Trump votes because he told people to vote twice. I believe in North Carolina, maybe generally all over, he wanted people to vote twice, which sounds like an illegal vote to me. Throw those out, maybe.
Hello. I just wanted to say that the reason the Cuban community is Republican and will continue being Republican is because they get benefits that other ethnic groups don't get. And the Republican Party down there makes sure that they retain those benefits. Now, Clinton and Obama chip away some of those benefits, but they still have them. So that's why Republicans have such a stronghold down there in South Florida. Thank you.
This is Joyce in St. Pete. I wanted to just mention about socialism. I know a lot of people are very confused about it. They, you know, a lot of them don't realize that we're somewhat of a socialist nation. So if you collect Social Security or Social Security disability, if you are on food stamps or any kind of public assistance, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, if you send your children to public schools, all of that is social programs. And so we are somewhat. So if you say you're not a socialist, then, or you don't believe in socialism, then you don't want any of those programs. And if you're on any of them, then get off.
Well, those were listener comments that came in after Friday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and we're going to listen back to Florida this week, which is a panel discussion about state and local politics. This was recorded on Friday, and we were discussing the election outcome here in Florida. We did not know yet that Joe Biden would win enough electoral votes to be named the president-elect. That happened on Saturday after we recorded this program. But there's still a lot of important information in this program, and if you want to react or respond to whatever is said on this upcoming program, please send an email into us to dj@wmnf.org. That's our address, dj@wmnf.org. We'll probably rely a lot on email comments because we don't have a phone screener today. So let's listen back to Florida this week from this past Friday night from WEDU-TV, the local PBS station here in Tampa. Coming up next, the Florida election count is done and will do, depending on how you view the outcome, an after-action report or an autopsy on the results. Why were the polls wrong? Why did South Florida Latino voters retreat from Democrats? And has Florida turned an emphatic color of red? We'll get perspectives from across the state with Mary Ellen Kloss from the Tampa Bay Times, Eduardo Gamarro of Florida International University, Rosemary O'Hara at the Florida Sun Sentinel, and Scott Maxwell with the Orlando Sentinel. All this on a special edition of Florida This Week. Welcome back. While the counting of the ballots is still going on in other states, President Trump won Florida in Tuesday's election by an even better margin than he won by in 2016. And for Republicans, there were other reasons to celebrate. They picked up two more congressional seats by knocking off Democratic incumbents in South Florida. They won the open congressional seats in the Lakeland and the Naples areas. Republicans also picked up seats in the state legislature, making it harder for Democrats to have any impact on the upcoming redistricting process. While there was not much for Democrats to celebrate on Tuesday, one progressive issue, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour over the next 6 years, passed with 61% support. Well, for Florida Democrats, President Trump's victory in the state caused a lot of down-ballot carnage for the party. The current Florida House now has 78 Republicans compared to 42 Democrats. That's a gain for Republicans of five seats. Mary Ellen Kloss is the co-bureau chief of the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, Tallahassee Bureau. Mary Ellen Kloss, welcome back to Florida This Week. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Let's talk first about the presidential count. What are statewide elected Republicans or even members of the legislature saying about President Trump and the counting of the votes in the other states?
Well, it's been pretty interesting. I mean, we've heard from the governor. We've heard from U.S. Senator Rick Scott. We've heard from Matt Gaetz. And they are pretty much the predictable allies of the president speaking out, and each of them has said that the president should keep fighting, and they see that as obviously going through the courts and pursuing. They've also been highly critical of the media and television, especially the cable channels that called some of these states earlier. But who we haven't heard from are, you know, the other primary leaders in the Republican Party, the State Senator, Senate President Wilton Simpson, House Speaker Chris Sprawls. You know, they haven't spoken up yet, and I think that's interesting that while they were supporting of the president, they're not saying what they feel about this, and I think they just want this all to go away.
Because on the national level, there have been several Republicans that say, "Let the count continue."
Right. Yeah. That has been the case, although the idea that the count should continue while the president is saying that any future count is a fraud puts these Republicans, I think, in a very precarious place.
Well, let's switch to the Democrats. They did not have a good day on Tuesday. They lost a couple of incumbent congressional seats, and they lost in the Florida House. What are the Democrats saying about why they lost? And President Trump won pretty decisively here in Florida. What are the Democrats saying about their loss on Tuesday?
Well, it's been interesting to watch, because I think the remarkable thing is that many of them did not anticipate it would be this big of a blowout. And when they have that kind of whiplash, you've got to know that something fundamental is wrong. And so that's the kind of examination they're doing right now. Some people who know Florida well, and we were hearing this a little bit from some of the longtime Democrats that were running the Senate operation, they were trying to be conservative. They said, this is a tough election year. We don't know how reliable votes are going to be. We really shouldn't be trying to break into new numbers. And they wanted to kind of pitch a more conservative race. Let's hold what we have. But it's my understanding that there's people who look at Florida as such a crucial battleground at the national level that they wanted to see the Florida legislature kind of go blue and at least have one of the chambers at least try to win more seats. And so they put, so it was the outside donor class that came in and put a lot of money into some of these races, and it just blew up in their face. So the interesting thing is that while there are many people now questioning whether we should be relying on these outside advisors, the other thing that was sort of interesting element here is that the polling just didn't seem to understand the dynamics that were at play, especially in South Florida. And they really missed where voters were. You know, we kept saying all along that people were pretty clear about where they were going on the presidential race. And it was, it seems that it was less clear where they were going in these legislative races. And because of that, they really should have been working on that messaging. Like, it's okay to split your ticket. And here's why you can vote, you know, for Biden, but, you know, vote for Republicans. And it seems like somehow that the split ticket idea was not a message that Democrats were able to pursue very effectively.
Well, one last question. We're down to our last 30 seconds. The Democrats relied mainly on television and mailers, while the Republicans added to their game plan, as they've always done, a pretty strong ground game. The Democrats have had a strong ground game in the past, but was that one of the important factors in the Democrats' loss, a lack of a ground game?
Well, you know, in this pandemic, it was really difficult for Democrats were not in the field as much. They were not doing the rallies. There was, I think, some really aggressive work done by young voters and getting younger voters out to vote. There's a lot of energy there, and that is something I think the Democrats will be able to tap in. But you're right. It was a different game, definitely.
Well, Mary Ellen Kloss, thanks a lot. Great to see you as always, and looking forward to seeing you again.
Thanks, Rob. Take care.
Rosemary Gaudreau O'Hara is an award-winning journalist and a longtime observer of Florida politics. She grew up in Tampa and for many years was the editorial page editor at the Tampa Tribune. Currently, she's the editorial page editor for the South Florida Sun Sentinel in Fort Lauderdale, and she observes that part of the state. Rosemary, welcome back to Florida this week. Nice to see you.
Hi, Rob. Nice to be here.
Democrats had a really bad day statewide here in Florida on Tuesday. They lost a couple of congressional incumbents, and they lost ground in the state legislature. Does that mean that Florida is now a red state?
I think there's no question but that we're no longer a purple state. We're kidding ourselves if we think that we're a swing state. Since the 90s, Republicans have controlled the governor's mansion, the Florida Senate, the Florida House, and since last year, we have a Republican state Supreme Court where you have to be a member of the Federalist Society to get on the court. Except for Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012, Republicans have run this state. And like all the southern states around us, we now are cloaked in red.
With all the people that are coming here to Florida, though, from the Midwest and from the Northeast, places like Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and New York and Massachusetts, people say, well, we're going to begin to reflect those more moderate or Democratic-leaning states up north.
A lot of people who come here, at least in South, you know, in South Florida, we're the bluest part of the state. I'm in Fort Lauderdale, where I'm at. We are the Democratic stronghold. And until Tuesday, Miami-Dade was too, and Palm Beach County. So we're the bluest part of Florida, except Tampa, the urban areas of Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, and the college towns. But everywhere else, it's a red area. Down on, you know, they say that the Midwesterners go to the west coast of Florida, and the Northeasterners come to South Florida. A lot of the folks coming here are coming to escape taxes. You know, the tax code made a lot of people want to come here and escaped the personal income tax. So we're seeing demographic shifts, but we're seeing no greater demographic shifts than we are with our immigrant population and the Hispanic population in South Florida.
Well, speaking of that, in the autopsies I've seen from Democrats about what happened on Tuesday, they say, look, if we had just done a better job of outreach, consistent outreach to the various groups that make up the Spanish-speaking population, Miami-Dade, and also if we had a ground game, Democrats say, they didn't really have a ground game. The Republicans did a really good job of contacting their voters. Things might have ended up more differently.
You know, I heard somebody say the Democrats had an air game and the Republicans had a ground game. We interviewed candidates for the legislature, you know, from South Florida, and umpteen of them said that they were knocking on doors. And I'm like, really? You're knocking on doors in the middle of the pandemic? And they said, people even invite us in. We don't go in. We stand 6 feet back. We put our literature on the porch table. But they were out there knocking on doors. Even these rallies, which, you know, we all saw a behavior that violated public health norms. But there's something about those rallies that are like religious experiences for people who care about politics. They get excited. They get fired up. They want to get their neighbors and friends and family with them. And to have President Obama fly into to Miami, he was here twice. It's just not the same thing to have a drive-in rally, you know, and toot your horn if you agree with me. And there's like 200 or 300 cars in the parking lot. That kind of, just like the convention, you know, it didn't excite people. And I think the inability of Democrats to address how to balance the pandemic with voter outreach and voter registration absolutely had an impact in this race in Florida.
One last quick question. Billionaire Michael Bloomberg promised to spend $100 million here in Florida to try to help Democrats win. Did you see much evidence of Bloomberg's money there from your position in South Florida?
You know, I saw the announcement that he would be spending $100 million to try to influence the Hispanic vote. I'm not Hispanic, but I can tell you that I didn't see it in any kind of general way. I mean, I pay close attention. Sure, there were some, I mean, there was targeting, I guess. But, you know, I think that his effort was about as effective as his performance in his first presidential debate.
Well, Rosemary Goodrow-O'Hara, always great to see you. Thank you for your insights. And I hope you'll come back to the program.
Good to see you, Rob. Take care.
Take care. Well, President Trump's campaign targeted the Latino vote in South Florida in the months leading up to the election. Those efforts seem to have paid off as the president drastically improved the level of his support from 4 years ago. Eduardo Gamarra is a political science professor at Florida International University and an experienced pollster. He joins us again here on Florida This Week. Eduardo, welcome back to Florida This Week. Why did President Trump do so well in Miami-Dade County?
Thank you for having me. Well, I think there's a couple of explanations. And the first and foremost, I think, is that President Trump and the Republican Party paid an awful lot of attention to this community. They paid especially attention to the Cuban community, to the Venezuelan community, and to the Nicaraguan community. And within that, they developed an umbrella message that really had two components. On the one hand, only Trump can overthrow or get rid of those dictatorships in those countries. And only Trump can prevent socialism from taking over the United States, right? So that umbrella message, which largely was infused with a lot of the kind of conspiracy theories from QAnon, which happened to kind of find a nice niche here in this community, I think contributed to the overall victory. So it was attention and a very focused and, you know, maybe fake message that worked.
Now, there in Miami-Dade, the voters elected a very liberal county mayor, and they threw out their two of the liberal members of Congress in that area. How did that happen?
I think it happened for two reasons, and it's important just to remember that, for example, Donna Shalala in 2016 won that seat with only 1.6% above Maria Elvira Salazar, who defeated her this time. And in the case of Debbie Mucarcel, she defeated a Cuban-American on a health care campaign that worked, but she only won by 6 points as well. So those were two very, very fragile districts to begin with. But if you add to that the umbrella message I mentioned before, in fact, Maria Elvira was probably the worst in terms of handling that message. She called Donna Shalala everything from, you know, a partner with the Castros to, you know, being the sort of the swordswoman of communism in the United States. So that kind of message was very powerful, and it worked. It was untrue, but it worked. And so I think, you know, in some measure, it also reflects here in this community, not only how powerful that issue is, right, that Cold War issue, but as I said before, Maria Elvira devoted an awful lot of time to her district, as did the former mayor of Miami, who is now our new representative from District 26, Carlos Jimenez. They spent money and time in the district, but yet still they were outspent by the Democrats. The Democrats spent a lot of money and still lost that election.
The Latin vote is still important here in Florida. There's a big debate about whether or not Florida is now a super red state, or is it still a swing state? Where do you stand on that debate?
Well, I think we're always going to be a swing state, and in large measure because I think Florida is a microcosm of the United States. You know, all of the different waves of immigrants from the South, from the North, really from everywhere. And that's what it reflects also is that we have a very deep division between urban and rural centers. Even with the gains by Republicans in Miami-Dade, this is still a very solid Democratic district. Let's just consider the fact that our new mayor, who replaced a conservative Cuban mayor, Daniel Levin Cava, is a Democrat, a staunch Democrat, who won largely because it was a district, you know, it was a countywide race that showed the power of Democrats in this district. If you look at Broward, also, it's more of a Democratic bastion today than it was a few days ago, and so on. So I think inevitably, because of the way in which the electoral system works in the United States and in Florida, we're never going to have, at the presidential level at least, you know, the security that either a Republican or a Democrat can win. So we're always going to be down to the wire.
Eduardo, we're down to the last 10 seconds, but the Democrats, would it be fair to say the Democrats need a Spanish speaker somewhere running for statewide office, and they don't really have any Spanish speakers outside of the Miami-Dade area?
I think what the Democrats need to do, this is a very important time of reflection for them in the state. They need to learn from what Republicans do. They pay attention to communities. They don't take communities for granted. And I think that's exactly what your question is pointing to. There needs to be a long-term strategy, not just something that materializes 3 or 4 months into a, you know, toward the end of a campaign.
Eduardo Gamarra, thank you for coming back on Florida This Week, and we'll check in with you again.
Right, my pleasure. Thanks again.
Scott Maxwell writes the Taking Names column for the Orlando Sentinel. 3 times a week, his column focuses on the interesting, funny, and sometimes maddening things that make Florida, Florida. He's had plenty of material to work with this past week. And Scott Maxwell, welcome back to Florida This Week. Great to have you here.
It is a pleasure to be with you again, Rob.
Scott, the pollsters got it wrong. Why do you think the polls were so off this time here in Florida?
Yeah, I've almost gotten to the point where I don't really waste as much time trying to figure out why they got it wrong as much as I just acknowledge that they did get it wrong. And this is not the first time they've gotten it wrong. They got it wrong, as we all know, back in 2016, really in overwhelming fashion. I think 538, which is supposed to be the Bible of polling for this country, had Hillary Clinton's odds at winning at something like 73% on the day of the election. Well, as you're probably aware, she's not, in fact, our president. That's Donald Trump. And it's not just that. I mean, it happened again this year. We had races, legislative races, where a Democrat was supposedly up 7 and ended up losing by 3. That's not just a margin of error. That's a massive margin of error. So we've seen this before, but media, a lot of them just continue to obsess on it in a way that I don't really think is healthy for journalism or democracy.
And is it simply because the Republicans are refusing to answer pollsters' questions and the pollsters didn't learn that lesson from 2016?
Yeah, there's something to that. There's the notion of they're not reaching the right people. If you're only reaching folks via text or online, or if you're reaching them on their cell phones, you're not getting everyone an actual sample. They claim to have. There's also the factor of some Trump supporters may not want to answer that way, that they're voting for him, and so it skews it. They claim to factor all this stuff in, but the, you know, blah blah blah. Give all the excuses you want. The bottom line is they're wrong before. They were wrong again. Biden was almost always up in every poll, at least by a little bit in Florida. As you know, he did not win. But the point I make is that it's lazy journalism. It's easy journalism. When media focus on this horse race coverage, I don't think it helps voters as much to know whether a candidate's up 2 or down 3 as much as it helps them to know what a candidate's policies are, where they stand, what their track record is, what is it that they've been proven to do. I just think this is lazy stuff that doesn't really advance any of the real issues.
So where are you on the question of whether or not Florida is a red state right now?
I think it is safe to say we are not a swing state anymore. The way I say it, I've said it in my piece this week, is that we are not deep red, but we're reliably red. And what I mean by that is that, yeah, there are slightly more Democrats and there are Republicans in this state. Yes, it's always close, but it almost always goes the Republicans' ways. And by the way, I don't think we can sell them short. I think they're just better at running campaigns. But whether you're talking about cabinet races, governor's races, U.S. Senate races, or presidential races, I crunched the numbers for the last 6 rounds, and Democrats have only won one of those races. Is for agriculture commissioner, which I don't think most people really care about. And Nikki Fried won that by 50.04%, I think it was. So if you have 2 teams, and one team's only winning 1 out of every 10 times, I don't think that's much of a rivalry.
Well, speaking of Nikki Fried, John Morgan, who's an attorney in your neck of the woods, came out this week saying that Nikki Fried, because she did not support the statewide minimum wage amendment, his words, that should disqualify her from running again for statewide office. How serious is the tension between Fried and John Morgan?
I think I would take it pretty seriously. I think John Morgan's got as much or more clout than any other Democrat in the statewide party. I mean, he posted arguably the biggest victory in Florida with the minimum wage amendment. And I think the part of what he was getting at is that what Fried didn't do was she didn't embrace what's a really basic plank of sort of the Democratic Party. And I think she came in sort of at the tail end and said she supported it with about 3 days to go. But what you're seeing here, Rob, is what Real Rogers talked about years and years ago. I'm not a member of an organized party. I'm a Democrat. This is a circular firing squad. They're always feuding with each other. But generally, I think it points to a party that just hasn't had its act together really in the past 20 years in the Sunshine State.
And Scott, one last question. If Florida voters voted overwhelmingly to raise the minimum wage, which is a real progressive idea, yet they voted for President Trump, how do you hold those two ideas if Florida voters are willing to do both?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the dichotomy between those two things is interesting. A state that goes Trump but also raises wages by upwards of 60%, as you notice, I think that's a vote of frustration. I think that is a vote. We are a low-wage economy throughout the state. Here in Metro Orlando, we are the lowest-wage metro in the entire United States out of the 50 largest. And I think there's a general sentiment that the leaders of this state just haven't cared much about that. We have people who swab bathrooms, clean hotel rooms, fry chicken tenders, and they work 40 or 50 hours a week, and they still can't put a roof over their head. None of the people in power have really endeavored to address that problem. We've got affordable housing crises and other problems. So I think this was voters saying, well, you know, you're not going to do anything about it. We're going to. And I think some of them understood there are some flaws. There's some drawbacks for small businesses. But they also say, you know what, I should be able to put food on my table and have a roof over my head for my children.
Scott Maxwell, it's always great to see you. Thanks for coming on Florida This Week.
You bet. Thanks so much.
Well, finally, it's been a trying time this week as we wait for election returns and deal with the virus. But the late musician Tom Petty, a Florida legend, has a hopeful song that promises something good coming. We tend to agree. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Don't know where to go. And I know that look that's on your face. There's something lucky about this place. There's something good coming for you and me. Something good coming.
Well, that was the way Florida This Week was on Friday night, the TV show on PBS. And my guests on that program, Eduardo Gamarra, professor at FIU, Florida International University, Mary Ellen Kloss, who is the Tallahassee bureau chief at the Miami Herald and the Tampa Bay Times, Rosemary Gaudreau O'Hara, who is the editorial page editor at the Florida Sun Sentinel in Fort Lauderdale, and Scott Maxwell is a columnist at the Orlando Sentinel. And if you want to comment about anything my guest said or that you've heard here so far, you can email the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. That program was recorded before we got the word the next day on Saturday that Joe Biden had won enough electoral votes to become the 46th president of the United States. And so we can talk about that. There's a lot of other issues I think that we could talk about. Matt Gaetz, the congressman from North Florida, who's been a close supporter of the president, he has tested positive for COVID-19. Politico is reporting that. And Governor Ron DeSantis, our governor, has suggested that electors in Michigan and Pennsylvania, that they consider selecting electors in those states who would buck the state's popular votes and cast their votes instead for President Trump. So Ron DeSantis floating the idea that there should be faithless electors planned for Michigan and Pennsylvania. There were big celebrations in Orlando and Miami and St. Petersburg and Tampa after the announcement on Saturday that Joe Biden had won enough electoral votes. In West Tampa on Columbus Boulevard, about 400 people showed up Saturday afternoon. And this is part of what it sounded like Saturday afternoon as people were celebrating the Joe Biden victory. That's the sound of people celebrating Saturday afternoon in Tampa, the Joe Biden victory. Democrats, they're celebrating. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Governor Rick Scott is making a move to chair the Senate Republican Campaign Committee. That is a step toward raising his profile in the country and maybe raising the possibility that he will try to run for president in 2024. Voters in Orange County approved an amendment that conveys rights to nature. They approved a right to clean water charter amendment. That's probably one of the most radical environmental moves in the state this time around. In Sarasota, there's a shortage of substitute teachers, and the COVID-19 numbers are creeping up there as they are across the state. So there's a teacher shortage there in Sarasota as kids are back in school, but the teachers, there are not enough teachers there to handle all the kids in school. And the Florida Department of Health reported yesterday 6,800 new coronavirus cases, marking the highest increase in daily reported infections since September 1st. So we could talk about all this. And I'm wondering about your take on the Republican Party's response to Joe Biden's victory in the race for president. Jane Mayer, the reporter from The New Yorker, has tweeted out just a moment ago that if Biden wins, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, the Republican, isn't waiting for the inauguration to obstruct the Democrats. Mayer tweets that McConnell plans to block cabinet choices by President Obama, or President Biden, rather, mostly women cabinet choices. That's what Mayer is tweeting out. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Anonymous writes this: are taxpayers footing the bill for Trump's ridiculous lawsuits against the election? I don't think taxpayers are footing the bill anywhere. But thank you for that. David writes this: I was pleased that Democrats did well in Hillsborough County races, like tax collector and property appraiser. I was always very pleased that Pat Kemp won re-election and beat Sandy Merman. How can we prevent career politicians like Merman from playing musical chairs on the county commission? Term limits really don't seem to work under the current system, writes David. Julie Scheid is, Miss Julie has graciously agreed to answer phones right now during the show. So we're going to take some calls from listeners. And again, if you want to call, our phone number, 813-239-9663. You can also send an email comment into dj@wmnf.org. And let's see who's calling in. Let's try Ben in Tampa first, who wants to talk about the elections. Ben, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I was listening to you guys when the election was called for Biden Saturday, and it's a done deal, you know. I want to ask you, it's been, what, going on 2 days, 2.5 now? What do you think would have been going on had the election been called for Trump? And I want an honest opinion, because I haven't seen anybody going crazy and burning and breaking and rioting on the Trump supporter side.
Well, there have been some demonstrations where armed people showed up at state capitals. It happened in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where 2,000 people showed up with weapons.
And then they did what?
Well, I think they intimidated everybody in Harrisburg.
Did they burn anything or break anything?
But I think they showed up with weapons trying to intimidate people.
Did they close off any streets? Did they tear
down? I don't know. 2,000 people, you may have had a street closed. I wasn't there in Harrisburg, so I can't tell you.
Now, what do you think would have happened had Trump won right now? What do you think would be going on in this country?
I don't know, Ben. I mean, I think you're saying that there would be violence. Why do you think there would be violence? Why do you say that?
What do you think has been going on the last 6 months?
Are we talking about the shootings of demonstrators by people with AR-15s and the gathering of people shouting down "Stop the vote" or "Count all the votes"? I mean, what are we talking about?
Destruction and riots.
Well, you're talking about the aftermath of the George Floyd killing, where people were angry that a guy was murdered on the street by police. Are you talking about that aftermath?
Yeah, I think that was all extortion. Going, you want more of this?
Well, all right, Ben, thanks a lot. I think you made your point. You think that there would be violence? I don't know. I don't think that there would have been violence, but you're certainly welcome to your opinion. What do you think, audience? What do you think about Ben? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Barbara in Tampa. Barbara, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Rob. I'm not sure if this is a good thing to announce or not, but I wanted to give people a heads up. Have you heard of the website Parler or the app?
No, I've not. I've not gone there. I've heard about it, but tell me why are you concerned about it?
Well, I mean, I haven't downloaded the app, but it's basically, you know, talking about hurting Democrats, kidnapping politicians that are Democrats, and doing bad things to Democrats, and just thought people should know about it.
Okay. How did you learn about it, Barbara?
On Facebook.
On Facebook. All right. Well, Barbara, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
Thanks.
We'll keep an eye on it. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Elizabeth writes this, it defies logic that so many people of color and Hispanics would come out to vote for an entity that condones deprecation and killing of their people. Florida fixed the vote, just like Texas. Undercounting in South Florida should be investigated, writes Elizabeth. Elizabeth, thanks for your thoughts. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Ron in Zephyr Hills writes, this is a serious question. If President Trump is convicted on state charges, would he still be entitled to Secret Service protection detail in prison, writes Ron in Zephyr Hills. I don't know the answer to that, Ron. I really don't know the answer to that. I assume he would be entitled to Secret Service protection. 813-239-9663. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to let's go to Mary in Dunedin. Mary, what's on your mind today?
Hi, darling. Thanks for taking my call. I just come out of my cancer doctor's office. I was waiting on the bench for my ride. This little old man walked up to me and asked me, did I believe in Jesus? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, if we don't get rid of that president, all the churches going to be closed. I said, which one? He said, Biden. I said, no, sir, he's not going to close all them churches. Yes, yes, he's going to close every church, and we're all going to have to be socialists. But where do they get this?
It's funny because Biden goes to mass at his church every Sunday.
Yeah, Biden's going to shut all the churches down, and we're all going to be socialists, really?
Yeah. Well, I assume they're listening to talk radio and watching conservative television, which in this country has plenty of those.
It, so yeah. I don't hear that crap unless somebody walks up about it. But, you know, I was polite, and I just called him Mr., even though he's just a few years older than me. But, you know, honestly, let's spread the truth.
Okay. All right. Well, you're not going to hear any of that talk here on MNF. But
I know. I love you guys.
Thanks, Mary.
The only show my radio knows.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks.
Have a good
one. You too. We're getting your response to the election. And also, how would you characterize what the Republicans have been doing the last few days since Saturday, since it was announced that Joe Biden did have enough electoral votes to win the presidency? Let's go to Remy in Lakeland. Remy, thanks for calling. Your turn.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Just had a follow-up comment about the application, the social media application Parler. I just want to make sure people aren't making, you know, generalizations that everyone on there is a maniac or something. I think Parler was created as a response to the censorship that we've seen a lot on Twitter. Actually, it's kind of almost coincidental that Twitter ramped up their censorship in the past few weeks.
Now, when a corporation does it, it's not technically censorship. When a government does it, it's censorship. When a private corporation does it, we have given so many rights to private corporations in this country, in part due to the Republican control of the U.S. Supreme Court. So if you want to complain about corporate control over people's speech, you might want to thank your Republican friends.
Well, it's also fair to note that it's a free service, and since Twitter's a free service, they have every right to do whatever they want. People fail to realize that.
That's right. Most of the time, Republicans argue that a corporation should be able to do whatever they want. So,
correct.
Yeah.
But Parler, you know, I've been on there. You know, it's not my favorite application. It's a lot of the development, and I'm sure there are some maniacs on there, like there are on every social media platform. But just don't want the listeners to make sweeping generalizations about the entire community on Parler.
Okay, Remy, thank you. Thank you for your thoughts. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let me read some of these emails that are building up. Rosie writes this, there is nothing worse than playing the what if game. I am so sick of hearing it over and over again. What if? My kids used to drive me crazy when they were young doing that, and there's a firm rule in the house, we do not buy the what if game, writes Rosie. And then, let's see if this is signed. I'll read it. Okay, I do not see a sign there, so I won't read that one. This one comes from Rick. He says, well, Trump won in 2016, so the caller can look back and see if the Hillary Clinton supporters reacted with violence. That's a good point. Thank you, Rick. Hillary Clinton supporters just went with it. Hillary Clinton offered some generous words, too, when it became apparent that Donald Trump had the winning number of electoral votes. She acted very graciously in the aftermath of the election. 813-239-9663 is our email address, is our phone number, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, thank you for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Rob. Happy Monday. I just want to make a couple of points that before this election, Trump basically said, if I win, it's legit. If I lose, it's a scam. In other words, heads I win, tails you lose. Another point, as an independent, and I wish the Democrats would really press this issue, is whenever Trump supporters are asked what they like about him, besides, you know, just his talk in general, is the economy. And I tell people, I'm like, well, do you remember what happened in 08? The economy tanked, and it's been ascending ever since. And I really don't think one man can take the economy and say, I created this, when it's really up to employers that make the economy roll. And if it's been going up since 08, then how can they say that, you know, it was Trump that created this? And I would think at this point, if they are paying attention to the stock market, they'd be thrilled right now. Thanks,
yeah, it's up by more than 1,000 points, the Dow Jones. Andy, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. Let's go to Ned in Bel Air Bluffs. Ned, you're on WMNF on 88.5 FM.
Hey, great show. I just want to make two short comments. I saw a picture the other day of Joe Biden smiling, and it was so genuine that it made me feel great because, you know, Trump just smirks. And my other point is all these rich Republicans are getting the tax breaks, et cetera. Everything's going their way. Nothing will make them happy, so let's not even worry about it. Thank you.
All right, Ned, thanks a lot. I bet Ned has some rich Republican friends living over there in Bel Air Bluffs. Ned, thank you. Let's go to Jose in Tarpon Springs. Jose, you're on MNF. What's your comment?
Good morning. Oh, well, it's just a short observation. I mean, especially after that first gentleman tried to do what you called the what-if game. You know, I saw that Biden had won at 11:30 on Saturday, and then almost immediately afterwards, the cities around the country just exploded in celebration. And it went on. I kept going from channel to channel, watching different cities, D.C., Boston, New York, all over the place.
Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota,
yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, dancing in the streets. And it occurred to me at some point when I came back and looked again and saw that it was going on into the evening, that this was the first time probably in 4 years that I saw a mass of people in the streets, and it was joyous. Usually there's tension of some effect somewhere. I mean,
you know, Jose, I was switching channels too, and I kept going to Fox, and they, every time I turned on Fox, there was no indication of these mass street celebrations, rather, in Washington, D.C., and Philadelphia, and New York, and elsewhere. Fox just ignored it completely.
Yeah, you're right. But for the first time to actually see people in the streets with no tension whatsoever, I think is a very good sign for what we're going in. That and the stock market today, the world leaders congratulating Biden without even waiting for Trump to concede, which is usually the tradition.
All except for Vladimir Putin, right?
Well, yeah. And Mexico, for some reason. I'm still trying to figure that one out. But I'm just saying that I hope that's an excellent sign of things to come. You know, it's just something everybody wanted, and it was a great time, and I think that's a great sign.
All right, Jose, thanks a lot. Thank you for your phone call. We're getting people's response to the results of the election that were announced on Saturday. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Mike in St. Pete writes, your caller Ben is propagandized into the Trump cult. The Kool-Aid has done its damage, writes Ben. And then Brian, Okay, Brian, that's a link to a story. I can't read that on the air. Kevin writes this, DeSantis will soon follow Trump. The time for electors to reject their orders was 4 years ago when Hillary Clinton clearly won the popular vote by more than 3 million votes, writes Kevin. And then another Kevin writes this, Ben, your caller speaks like he's a prophet of doom. If Biden hadn't won, buildings would have burned? Fear and loathing is now the Republican Party motto, writes Kevin. And Andy in Tampa writes, we can look back to the 2016 election when it was called for Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton graciously conceded defeat and there were no riots. So Andy answering Ben's question, what would happen if Donald Trump had won re-election? 813-239-9663. Let's go back to the phones and we're going to go to Liz in Spring Hill. Liz, thanks for calling. Hi, Liz.
Good morning. Good morning, Rob from Hernando County. For the first time in a long time, I'm able to take a full breath. I don't know what's going to happen going forward, but what we're doing up here is we were able to, the Democratic Party up here in Hernando County, we were able to sign up and turn out 50% of the Democrats up here for mail-in voting. I myself quadrupled my vote. By assisting and talking to other Democrats and independents. And even though we had a poor showing in Florida, what we've decided up here as a party, I had talked to my chairman the other day, and I said, what do we do now? And he said, celebrate today, tomorrow we organize.
All right, Liz, thank you. Thank you for your comments. All right. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Beverly, who's in Largo. Beverly in Largo, thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Rob. I just want to make a comment that I want to assure you that every Democrat that I know does not want any violence. Every Democrat that I know wants a peaceful transition of power. Every Democrat I know wants Trump to concede like a man. And I'm sorry to hear about the Parler app that this woman that called earlier, and that Facebook, she heard about it on Facebook, is disturbing. Zuckerberg, unfortunately, doesn't run that very well. I deleted it a long time ago, and I'm on Twitter now, which is run a lot more professionally. So she might want to consider joining Twitter.
Okay, Beverly, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thanks,
Tony's in St. Pete. He writes this, Joe Biden won in spite of the fact that Republicans have done everything possible for the past two decades to, one, suppress voters of color and ex-felons. Two, Democrats in the election of 2000 led by Al Gore gave in gracefully, though Gore did win the popular vote in 2000. And Tony goes on to write, three, Republicans through trickery and against all precedent have filled the Supreme Court with far right-wing judges, writes Tony in St. Pete. Kat in St. Pete writes, only cowards take guns to protest. Why are they afraid of their fellow Americans, writes Kat. Talking about the protests in some cities up north in places like Harrisburg where people brought guns to protest the Biden win. Let's see, people are sending lots of links. I wish I could read a link on the air. Handy writes this, President Trump has lost touch with reality. Can he be Baker acted, writes Handy. All right. Let's see. Pete in Seminole writes, many ballots were secretly watermarked. Let's see if this holds water. That's one of the conspiracy theories out there, is that the ballots were secretly watermarked. And Peter is sending, I think, that message sarcastically. All right, Peter, thank you for that. Jan writes this, in my opinion, a lot of people voted for Biden not because they liked his promises, but simply because they couldn't vote for Trump. Same situation that occurred in 2016, Trump or Clinton. We have a political system that is a duopoly, Republican and Democrat, and both parties will resist any new entrants. Therefore, the American people have been left with only two choices, and often neither of them are good, writes Jan. That's her thoughts. And Jeff writes this, There are some that argue that social media should be regulated like a public utility, writes Jeff. Yeah, that argument is out there. Thank you. And then DeMarco writes, this, what the Trump mob and Republicans have been doing since the election is called sedition, writes DeMarco. Well, if you want to comment about today's program, please call us up on our comment line, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sean Canaan. He's going to be talking about the elections. He's got a really good program planned, so stick around for the Midpoint program coming up in just 5 minutes. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks to Miss Julie. This is WMNF in Tampa. Here's the news.